I know. It happened again. Lightning struck twice. Guest lightning.
Oh, God. Are the guests on strike along with the LA teachers?
Oh, my God. Yeah, that finally got resolved today. So last day the kids are being home. They're not happy about it, but they're going back to school tomorrow.
Well, you know, I hope the teachers got everything they wanted.
So, yep. Everything's in a news blackout, so we have literally no idea as of this podcast recording. So, but I'm sure they got close considering they would have not accepted
right.
anything.
I mean, it's still, as you were saying, so the teachers union just needs to vote on it to ratify it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it gets resolved and the teachers get what they wanted and the venture capitalists that run the school board had to acquiesce.
Yeah, then it's a win.
Then it's a win. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, a 6 or 7 day strike is not.
Yeah.
I mean, I was worried that this was going to just be like.
Well, I talked to the teachers. I mean, we went to the picket lines and they were saying, you know, the last strike lasted about 2 weeks. The one before it lasted like something like 6 to 8 weeks, like something like long, like almost 2 months. Yeah, I'm like, and I just rolled my eyes. I'm like, oh, my God, because that'd be a nightmare for everyone, for the teachers, for the kids, the administrators, the parent, everybody. I mean, a 2-month strike is a disaster.
It would affect this show.
Yes, probably.
It would affect the show. You were able to kind of squeak through it with this
for 2 weeks.
But
2 months is another story.
There would have been some garage episodes or something.
Yeah, there would have been a few. Or there would have been two kids with headsets here watching us record.
In separate rooms because they've just been fighting. They've been beating the crap out of each other.
A cobra and a mongoose, as my dad used to say. It's, it's like a cobra and a mongoose, you and your brother. So, but you know what? It's funny. Like these teachers, they've been negotiating for 2 years. 2 years. So if somebody says, hey, you know what? We don't have the money, but we all want the same thing. Let's try to figure it out. That's a great excuse for about 6 weeks. 2 years, it's a con.
Yeah.
Then you're playing pool with Robert Redford or Paul
and that's
Newman.
When that's when you have to call their bluff and go on strike.
Yeah, and then they had to go on strike. So
there's a similar thing. The Chicago Teachers Union just put out what they want. Mm-hmm. Their contract is up June 30th, and they just put out, this is what we want.
Right.
Like, we're giving you a chance to figure this out. Mm-hmm. Look what happened in L.A. Look at all these teachers' strikes. The teachers have won.
And the thing that L.A. had a lot of clout is the second biggest school district in the country.
Yep.
Just underneath New York.
Chicago's the third.
So we, as a family, we went to see Mary Poppins over the weekend.
Wow.
So,
how was that strike movie?
We'll be talking about that for sure. So we're going to be talking about a lot of movies today. We're going to be talking about Vice, Mary Poppins Returns, Beautiful Boy in Eighth Grade, and we've got our Patreon sponsors. We're going to be talking about some cool trailers, some DVDs and Blu-rays, and some very odd movies coming out in the theaters. And I know why it is, though. We're getting into the dumping ground for theatrical releases. People want you to catch up on Oscar movies, and we're getting ready for the bigger releases. So now they haven't quite figured out. Every once in a while, a good movie sneaks in here, but it's rare.
And real quick, so they announced Oscar nominations came out this morning.
Yes.
We're going to do a little separate
episode,
30-minute, just kind of going through it. It won't be we'll do the Doug Benson who will.
So we're just going to kind of go through the announcements. We won't go through what we think we should win until we get Doug Benson.
Yeah, we'll go into some snubs and whatever else that happened, but that'll be a separate episode.
Yes.
So buckle up for that, you sons of bitches. All right.
So let's talk, speaking of politics, and let's talk about Vice. You finally saw Vice. Now, I will say this, going into Vice, seeing the trailers, and also, you know, reading a little bit about the film, reaction's been all over the map. Best movie of the year, great performances, I've actually seen worst movie of the year. And I was worried, before I hear what you have to say about it, this is what I was worried about this movie, that would be like W, where it was just kind of like, you know, liberal porn of like a polemic.
So one-sided.
Where it was like, you know, you're not showing me anything I didn't already know, and you're not giving me any new information. You're just, you know, reinforcing a specific viewpoint.
I was worried about that, too. Mm-hmm. I saw the trailer and was like, all right, you know, we got a lot of wacky wigs and haircuts.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know if I'm going to buy this. And
weight gain, weight loss.
Weight gain, you know, prosthetics, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Crazy accents and whatever else, you know.
Yep.
And But Adam McKay, he's a good director, and he, yes. And overall he did a good job. Is there some liberal porn business in there? Yeah, mm-hmm. There's some. But he also really, in the way that he did with The Big Short, give you a lot of details that you probably weren't aware of.
Right.
That I at least wasn't aware of. And I'm sure a large portion of the audience who saw this movie was like, I did all the specifics of Big Short, even some of it was kind of hard to follow.
Right.
But, you know, he did a good job. I mean, the one thing in Big Short, you know, Steve Carell and those guys are not heroes, those characters in Big Short. Right. They're kind of made out to be heroes. Like, mm-hmm. They were just trying. They all made money. Mm-hmm. They didn't give their money back. They didn't go, oh, we're going to help all these people get back in their homes.
Right.
They're just weasels that weren't as we like. They
saw the writing on the wall.
They saw the writing on the wall, mm-hmm. And profited from it. They profited from all of this misery.
Yes.
So those guys aren't heroes. Adam McKay kind of depicted them as heroes. That was the one thing I was like, all right. So this, one of the things that he does well, first, Christian Bale does a great job.
Mm-hmm. He's almost unrecognizable.
Almost unrecognizable. And we were having, when I was on this other podcast, Who Shot You, the Max Fun one, which is, we had an interesting discussion. We were talking about Destroyer. And, you know, we mm-hmm. talked about Destroyer on this show.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, A-list act, especially when an actress, pretty actress plays, goes ugly, that's she's trying to get an Oscar, and we were talking about that. This is different because Destroyer is a piece of fiction.
Hashtag ugly Oscar.
Hashtag ugly Oscar. Because he's playing an actual person. Like when mm-hmm. Meryl Streep played Margaret Thatcher, and you know, it's actually an easier sell for me because
Charlize Theron in Monster.
Well, that was a good one. Charlize Theron, and they did a good job of making her look like that actual woman.
Right.
And so I was like, wow. And also when you're doing something like Margaret Thatcher or Dick Cheney, having a big name actor play them actually fits because here's a larger than life person being depicted by a larger than life person.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Destroyer is just a fictional character. It's one of the things that didn't work for me in Destroyer. So there's that. And Christian Bale does a really good job. Mm-hmm. And he says that, you know, because Adam McKay likes to do improvisational directing, he likes to let, because he comes from a improv and sketch background.
I used to do stand-up with him many years ago in Philly.
Yeah, he was in an improv troupe in Chicago. I knew him and a lot of those, Matt Besser and those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes from that background. And I think it makes his... It makes the people seem human and relatable when he's directing in that style. And mm-hmm. But you got to have actors that can do that. And so Christian Bale said he had to really do a lot of research so that he could improvise in character. That's a tough thing to do.
Right.
But he had that, you know, Dick Cheney, you know, credence. I sound like Johnny Carson when I'm doing it. But he really did a decent job. The thing that I think he was pretty good with was how accurately Cheney and that White House circumvented the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's liberal porn in that he doesn't really hold any other White House accountable for any of their crap.
Right.
You know, the end of The Big Short, he... in my opinion, didn't go hard enough at Obama for not. He just said, all these people were prosecuted and this will never happen again. Then he goes, oh, wait, which is like, oh, shit. But he didn't flat out say Obama should have done more, which he should have. So there is that Hollywood liberal slant to it that makes it seem like the Republicans are bad only.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Dick Cheney and George Bush are fucking war criminals,
right?
In my opinion. And it's good in some senses for this movie because it shows you all of the little specific conniving ways and how Cheney, you know, the lineage worked for Rumsfeld during the Nixon White House, you know, was buddies with a young Anthony Scalia and all of that stuff and how they sort of stacked everything up to...
Was he a defense contractor at one point? Mike Cheney, or he worked with after. Okay.
After, he, And there's a funny thing in the movie I don't want to give away. In the middle of the movie, there's a fucking hilarious thing that Adam McKay does that's fucking great. It's really funny. But like, you know, he got into the, after Nixon, he got into Ford, and he was the one who concocted the plan of, look, anyone that's, we just need to distance ourselves from Watergate, you know? And then, you know, gets in the George Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, you know, gets in the Reagan and the Bush camp. And then how you, like, he's, like, I was like, when they nominate him as the VP, I was like, who is this guy? You see, oh, he's been a Republican insider for a long time. And after George H.W. Bush lost to Clinton, that's when he went and started working for Halliburton. But he had already helped pass laws privatizing all of these things in the military, which is what Halliburton did. So there's a lot of like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe they got away with this shit. But then you need to do that for all of the last seven presidents, eight. Like, I mean, like, you need to do this for a long time because they all got away with a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. You know, Zbigniew Brzezinski armed the Mujahideen ahead of the Soviet invasion of, you know, I mean, like, we could all go into that. But as a film, I did like it, and it does have funny Adam McKay things in there, you know, where he's like, I can't begin to know. And the person doing the voiceover, I can't begin to know what Dick Cheney was thinking at that moment when he first hatched the plan that, you know, because he's asked to be the VP and he's like, I don't want to do this. You know, there's a scene, they're at a party, and George Bush Sr. is like, thanks to, and you see how his wife, Amy Adams, plays it great. She's the, like, Lynn Cheney. She was the, like, got him on track, you know, and made him the man that he is, you know, kind of thing. And that relationship is great. The acting in it is great. So as far as just a movie, it's a very entertaining, good movie. And I think it provides a lot of information that people didn't know about the intricacies that what that White House did. But then, you know, and then there's just funny stuff. Like, I don't know what they could possibly, was it some sort of Shakespearean thing? And then, like, you see the Adam McKay humor. I don't want to give this away, but there's some funny ass shit in the movie that makes you laugh out loud. And then, you know, there's a scene very much at the end, a stinger that's just sort of like, I was like, all right, that's the, like,
for the sequel.
Yeah. It was just more, that was where I was like, yeah, you just made the thing for liberals to high five over.
Right.
And you're not holding the whole corrupt system accountable. Mm-hmm. That's my point of view.
Okay.
That's why you should go to Political Vigilante on my YouTube. But well, good movie.
So it is good.
Not best picture of the year.
Right.
But good, a couple good performances. I mean, I like Christian Bale, you know, he got the nomination and, you know, he did a good job in it. I mean, he really.
Now, is the movie, like, if you had to name the tone, is it satire? Is it, you know, over-the-top comedy?
No.
What is it?
No, it's not a comedy. It's not satire. It is a...
You can't really tell from the trailer.
No, and that's part of the problem is trailer editors don't know what to do with a movie like this.
Right.
They want it to be wacky satire or...
It's real serious.
It's a dramatic depiction, a dramatization of actual people and actual events that has some funny jokes put in it.
Okay.
You know, that has some funny interpretations of stuff. But it's usually clearly the jokes aren't like, ha ha, wasn't it the slapstick gang at the White House starting an illegal war in Iraq? It's like the joke is like clearly an Adam McKay joke. I don't want to give the jokes away, but just like, well, I don't know what happened here for sure. So I'm going to do this funny thing in here to help explain it just as sort of like comic relief because the shit they got away with is, you know,
insane.
It's insane. It's insane.
All right. So check out Vice. Did okay on the Academy Award nominations.
Yes,
that's for sure.
Yes,
so we'll talk about that. So I saw Mary Poppins Returns with the family, and interesting thing is, I was reading the trivia, and some of the trivia is absolutely fascinating. Like, Angela Lansbury and Dick Van Dyke are both in the film. They're both 93 years old.
No way! 93,
and Dick Van Dyke is dancing on top of a desk.
Awesome.
And they even said, they gave him four options for his dance scene with varying degrees of difficulty. He insisted on doing the hardest one and refused any help while filming the scene. But he looked so good for 93, they actually had to make him look older with makeup and wig. So I found that absolutely fascinating. Now, this movie, I'll tell you, it came out at really the right time because everything's going to hell, you know, in the world. There's nothing but bad news. It's been awful lately. And this movie is a nostalgic throwback to not only musicals of the 50s, but also of like that magic of big studio movie making that had singing and dancing and big stars. And ultimately, at the end of the movie just made you feel good. Like, you know, it was one of those feel good. There's no problems are going to be solved. Giant things are going to be solved in this. There's no giant heart wrenching scenes in this. You know, there's it's human emotion, it's connection, and it's ultimately joy. The movie is supposed to bring joy. And that's what it does.
And that's what those, mm-hmm. that's what, especially that era of 70s Disney, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, yes. Mary Poppins. Mm-hmm. Those were just fun,
right.
Joy.
Musicals.
I mean, musicals.
Yeah, yeah. And the one thing I really liked, too, was that the director, Rob Marshall, he wanted to do a hand-drawn animation scene that was reminiscent of the original Mary Poppins. The studio exec said, no, we want to do it all computer. And he said, no, we're going to be fucking doing hand-drawn. And he got his way. It was an entire hand-drawn scene. And they got old Disney animators out of retirement to actually work on the scene.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it is the most beautiful, the most magical scene in the entire movie because what it is, it's a mixture of the old classic Disney animation, but with the new technology of making it look almost 3D with the characters interacting. Like the original Mary Poppins, everything's flat. It's like Mary Poppins is dancing with penguins, but you know, you can tell like they're animated over and like it was cool at the time. But you really didn't get that depth and 3D feel. But and, you know, the argument is always, well, you can't do that with 2D animation. You know, it has to be 3D animation to really get immersive like that. Not true. This movie proved that argument wrong. And I knew it was a wrong argument all the time. You just let the artist do their thing. They're in a car. They're in a, you know, they're in a nightclub. They're in this, you know, there's these beautiful hand-drawn animated scenes, but then the camera's moving around. Mm-hmm. And it looks fantastic. Like, it looks like these 2D animated characters and images are coming to life with the 3D live-action characters. Like to the point where you've never seen it before. That,
oh, wow.
And the reason is because nobody does 2D animation right. anymore. And if it is a 2D animated movie, it's not going to have live-action people in it. Like, because that's always the go-to. If you're going to mix live-action and animation, it's always going to be 3D computer animation.
Did it make you go, yeah, I'm glad we saw this on the big screen? Like, that scene's particular, did it need
that
to
scene
be on the
particular, yes. Yeah. You know, there were other scenes, like, you know, they're just in the house or the bank, or even some of the other fantasy scenes were good, but that one was like, oh my God. Like, it's so good that you're like, well, I would kind of wish the whole movie was like this. Yeah, and, but again, too expensive. He could only get his way for one scene. Now, the movie itself, the acting's great. Emily Blunt's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, she's really good. She really
let's look at her for a second.
Yeah.
She's an amazing actress.
She
and
really
she
is.
She keeps getting more, like, diverse in her roles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, remember when she did the first, like, badass action movie? We're like, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
The cute girl from the rom-com, the girlfriend,
right.
is now like an ass kicker, and now here she is doing Mary Poppins. Like, she's a really versatile actress.
She was fighting time monsters. She was fighting, you know, sound monsters, and now, you know, and now she was Mary Poppins. And Mary Poppins came out in 64. So that means, and again, another great trivia item is that it was released 54 years later, which is a record for the longest gap between a live-action film and its sequel in history.
Wow.
So I will say this. It's not a perfect movie. Like, it does what it sets out to do. It's supposed to be a fun, nostalgic, joy-filled Disney animated live-action fun family movie. It achieves that for sure. Where it falls a little flat is that, is the songs. Like, the songs were a little just kind of flat. Like you expect a movie like this, especially because it's been in development for so long, and music is such a large part of it, that these songs are going to, the guy from Hamilton, the songs are going to be amazing. And they weren't. They were just okay.
That's
so that was probably the most disappointing part. Like, but they weren't bad. They were just okay. But, like, I'll give you an example. Like, when you saw Frozen, like, I remember seeing Frozen, thinking these songs are fantastic, and then halfway through Let It Go, I'm in my head, I'm like, well, that's Academy Award nominated song, and sure enough, it got nominated. But there was
you
never
could just
those
hear the gold statue jingle.
Totally. When I'm like, okay, yeah, this is going to be nominated, but for a movie like this, like, there wasn't any of those standout songs, which I was a little surprised at. Everything from, Fly Kite, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, like, there was never any of those really standout songs. They were okay. Like, they weren't like, oh, these songs are horrible, but it wasn't like that. You wanted just a little bit more out of the songs and the score. But really, I mean, the kids liked it. My wife liked it. I liked it. It was a really good, fun, joy-filled, nostalgic movie. It just wasn't perfect. It could have been a little better if the songs were better. If it was a little long, it could have been a little shorter. But I know the original Mary Poppins was long too. I think they were a little bit too slavish to the beats of the original movie. Like, well, we need to recreate the original movie. Like, these are the Banks kids grown up, and we're going to be on the same. We're going to be in the same street, and you're going to have some of the same characters or their descendants or whatever. I'm like, well, you don't really have to. It's Mary Poppins. You know, she's a magical nanny. She could go and do whatever she wants. And she doesn't age, so it could be a completely different family. It could be any of those things. But they chose to kind of stick a little bit too slavishly to the original, which I don't think was completely necessary. But other than that, like I said, it was just a fun, fun family movie, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And speaking of a family movie, you saw a beautiful boy. It has a boy in it and a father.
It is a family movie. So this movie is based on two books. One is the father, David Schiff's book, A Beautiful Boy, A Father's Journey Through His Son's Addiction. And then Nick Schiff wrote a book called Tweak because he was a meth addict. Mm-hmm. So it really is combining those two actual accounts. And then the co-screenwriter, Luke Davies, is himself a recovering addict. He wrote a book after he got clean called Candy, which was then also made into a movie in 2006. So they did a really good job depicting drug addiction, mm-hmm. and how it affects the family. And, Steve Carell does a really good job as this super concerned father who, kind of does everything you shouldn't do when you have a son that's an addict. You try to do that and you hope it's going to, and you meddle and you monitor their life too much. And you see his journey of like having to come to grips with the fact that no matter what he does, his son's going to be an addict. Mm-hmm. And if his son gets clean, it's not going to be because of him.
Right.
And that's a thing that's a really hard thing to deal with if you've ever either come from a family with addiction or had a loved one that was an addict who just their behavior defies logic. And you're like, what are you doing? This kid, like, you got accepted to college. What do you? And the kid, man, he does an amazing, amazing job. What's the kid's name? Who's in it? Charlotte, the kid, I don't have this wrong.
Oh, Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah. Timothy Chalamet. He does a really good job of like, and you see too, and this is the case with alcoholics or drug addicts, but especially drug addicts, they relapse numerous times. Mm-hmm. These events happen. So they do a good job of accurately depicting it. You keep waiting for the Hollywood, like,
polish.
Polish, mm-hmm. and the rainbow comes flying, and everything's great, and you see, like, man. And, you know, Morna Tierney plays the stepmom, and so they have two other kids, and you see it. You see, like, how it affects the little stepkids who look up to their older half-brother, and, you know, and you see the mom. They're divorced, and she's in L.A., and, you know, it's a really well-made, gripping, pretty fair account of how a family, how this affects the entire family, mm-hmm. man. Because it's like, I mean, it's a disease. It's like if you had a kid that was, you know, had leukemia or cancer or something, it would affect every aspect of your family's life. It would affect the other kids in the family. It would affect your money. It would affect your job. It would, you know, Steve Carell does a lot of great scenes of him just like not paying attention somewhere.
Right.
You know, at work, or the other kids, his younger kids have a swim meet, or, you know, just like, and you're just like, wow. And you see the pain and the emotion of it.
It's been a lot of kids in crisis movies this year. this movie, the Julia Roberts movie, you know, Boy Erased. It's been a lot of them came out this year, mm-hmm. which is, you know, what people don't realize is that movies take a very long time to go into development and in production. So it's always a weird coincidence when similar ideas and themes get released in the same year, because there's so many variables.
Yeah, there's a lot of variables. Right. But I think sometimes too is like one of them gets greenlit and then everyone goes, well, let's
piggyback.
Well, if they're greenlitting, then other script we have that's similar, let's get that made.
Yeah, there's that too.
You know, because that got Julia mm-hmm. Roberts. Well, this one, mm-hmm. how about we'll get Steve Carell? You know, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah.
But it's you know, and it's like the. You watch
great
this.
Marketing meetings. Oh, people like kids in crisis movies. Let's green light two or three
junkie
more of
kid.
Them.
Let's yeah, do it. Yeah. Grab it. But yeah, you see the family have to figure out how to get to Al-Anon meetings. You know, right. like as someone that's done that, I'm just like, let's go to Al-Anon. You're not going to be able to change anybody. It's never going to work. They're going to do what they're going to do. You just got to take care of yourself. But like, yeah, it's a really well-made movie, and
you just save some people a lot of time going to those meetings.
Yeah,
you just summarized the entire thing.
It's never gonna work. You're never gonna change them. And you know, just kind of, and we'll go into it in a separate episode. Just kind of glancing at the Oscar nominations. I might put this under the Shun category. We'll go into that a little more, but it's a good film, and it's. It's worth watching if you can see it, and there's great performances in it, and well made, and feels pretty accurate, you know.
So I saw Eighth Grade, and this is a movie I've been wanting to see for a while. So I finally got a chance to see it. And Bo Burnham is a like a mid-20s comedian, but he also was a YouTube star when he was young, when he was a teenager. So he's actually drawing a lot of those experiences as he made this movie, because this whole movie, it's about a girl's last year of eighth grade, actually last week of eighth grade. But it's told through the lens of devices and social media and all those things that these kids are on all the time. And as a father of an eighth grader, this movie resonated particularly well with me, because we all watched it together. My wife, my daughter, and I, and, you know, there's a lot of things we were laughing at, like everything from, like, you know, being on the device all the time to, you know, just being snippy and cranky all the time. You know, my 13-year-olds have two settings, sullen and irritated. That's pretty much it. So that was depicted very well in the film as well. And... one of the things that I found really, really interesting about this movie is that it got some Golden Globe love, but, you know, Oscars kind of shunned. And one of the reasons I believe, you know, I don't have no proof to support this, is that because the older Academy members would have no idea what's going on in this movie.
Right.
You know, unless you are very young, or you have a child that's about this age that you see what they're going through, your ability to relate to this film would be limited. Mm-hmm. And because it's the kind of film that if you're kind of in that world, which is a lot of people, you get it and understand it and you see why it's hard and you see, you know, the truths that are being revealed from this film. However, if you're 80-year-old Academy member or even, there's no way you would relate to any of this because, first of all, you barely understand what they're doing on the phone. You know, right. That's like Instagram, Snapchat, yeah. And all those things. Like, there is a joke.
The filters.
That, It's like, no one uses Facebook anymore, Mom. You know, like there's lines like that that also made us all laugh. But it was really, I was trying to figure out like what it reminded me of. And then it kind of came to me. This is a technological YouTube version of Welcome to the Dollhouse. That's what this was, for sure. Like, you know, this girl is an outcast, but, you know, she comes alive when she does her videos for YouTube. She can't figure anything out. You know, she's angry and lashing out. She likes the boy that barely talks to her. You know, all those things, like, sure. You could kind of see. And, you know, there's girls, the pretty girls are mean to her, you know, that.
Pretty girls are the worst.
Yeah, yeah. They don't understand it's not going to last. So it's a great mix of Welcome to the Dollhouse, and also it has those tropes but told in a different way of, like, you know, a John Hughes movie, like a 16 Candles or something like that. So I think it's a really interesting, but it also felt a very personal story. Like the filmmaker, even though the filmmaker is male and the lead was female, it doesn't matter because what they were going through at that age was the same, you know, dealing with peers and social media. And, you know, it didn't really get into cyberbullying as much, but you could tell that there's definitely that element. It's always there. You know, the clueless parents that are, you know, they're never going to understand you. You're 13. You know, it's never like, no matter what the parent says or does, no matter how loving and caring the parent is, like in this movie showed, you know, when you're 13 and the whole world feels like it's closing around you, you're going to lash out. It doesn't even matter. So, and it has some great moments and scenes like that, where you have the lead and, you know, Elsie Fisher is the lead, and she does a fantastic job. She just graduated eighth grade when she was shooting it. It really shows everything she was trying to do. It was like, you know, at one time she's angry and, you know, lashing out. Another time she's so insecure and just wants to break down in tears and, you know, bad things are happening, good things are happening. It's a complete mix. But the whole point is that it's difficult to navigate at that age. And that's what this movie shows so beautifully.
It's all difficult.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter
who
you are, where you're at. It's difficult to navigate.
Yes. So, and that's what this movie showed. And I really thought it was a really great heartfelt movie. It was a the one thing I do have a bit of a problem with is the rating. I mean, it's a rated R movie. So what it is kind of eliminating a lot of the kids that should be seeing this movie.
Oh, right.
Like, you know, a 17-year-old, I'm like, no, every 13-year-old should see this movie. And the reason it was R is because there was a little bit of sexually explicit talk, but there was nothing graphic that was being shown. It was just like researching some stuff on the internet and then, you know, her putting her headphones in really quick. But those couple seconds of like sexually explicit material that was not shown but talked about, boom, R rating. So
that's unfortunate.
Yeah. So really, I mean, this is a PG-13 with a couple of arbitrary R moments in it. So if you do have a 13-year-old, especially one that, you know, is having difficulty navigating all this, it's definitely it's not only a good movie, but it's also one of those movies that you can point to and say, see, you're not alone. Everybody's kind of going through this. So I'm glad it was made.
Yeah.
So it was a good film.
God, I hated being 13.
Yeah. We all did.
I don't miss that at all. How horrible.
Yeah.
Then you're in this school with all these other weirdos.
Middle school is the worst.
It's the worst.
Yeah. You know, everything's, you know, it's fun and cute in grade school, and then middle school is the worst. Then everything slowly gets better in high school when people become people.
Yeah, you start as you kind of get up and grow, start to become a young adult, then you find your friends and what you kind of, you start to figure out what you like and don't like. And
yeah, middle school is just this black hole of misery and hormones.
Awful. It's all I remember is bad clothes,
yeah,
and hair and skin problems and boners at any given moment that you didn't want.
Just and then getting made fun of for no reason because the other kid next to you is going through the exact same thing and just has no other outlet but to yell at you.
And then you, you lash out.
Yeah, exactly.
No one's handling it right because you're dumb 13-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah.
Your parents don't care.
No.
Because they shouldn't because 13-year-olds are stupid.
Yeah. So all right. So check those movies out for sure. Graham, we've got our Patreon sponsors. They haven't gone anywhere. No one's,
God love
no
them.
No one's canceled mid-January.
You guys,
it's great.
I want to just wrap you up in a blanket and take you on a camping trip.
Yes. Digitally.
Digitally. No, I want to do it for real.
Yeah.
And then murder you and have nobody know where to find you.
At least for 3 months until your credit card runs
out. Yeah, just 3 months. So we should add a CFN camping murder camp trip tier.
Yeah.
It's a couple $100 a month. And you may
hashtag
or may not.
Hashtag camp murder tier.
Yep. Come on, guys. It's a CFN murder camp trip.
You know, and for an extra $20, you could choose your method of murder.
Yes. Yes.
You know, drowning. It's
right.
Bear mauling, whichever. That's a premium tier.
Hiking accident, in quotes.
And a rock slide.
Rock slide.
So, or going to a national park where there's no rangers on the payroll right now.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's that danger as well.
Stumble across a meth lab tier, get murdered by them.
Yep. Or have a Joshua Tree fall on you.
Yeah.
So, Johnny Rulon.
Johnny Rulon, you son of a bitch.
He's promoting his novel, Green Cheek. It's Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon in both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel, which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover, T.S., on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden place of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com, happyhorrorshowproductions.com. And the Audacity Performing Arts Project produces after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools.
Audacity.
Performing arts education is not a luxury. Visit them at audacityperformingarts.com. Audacityperformingarts.com. I'm sure they're in schools right now that aren't on strike.
So, somewhere.
Somewhere. Outside of L.A. County. Chris Parker Howard's podcast, Coffee Over Suicide. It's about mental illness and choosing life over death when copied at cup of coffee at a time.
That's a good thing. Positive thing.
You're doing good work.
I like that.
Get caught up on season one before the season two premiere in February, wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com. And Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and Tea with Alice.
I really like tea.
Yeah.
So I had some amazing loose leaf green tea this morning. I always think of Sanai.
Mm-hmm.
She took me to a green tea store in Tokyo. God, it was fantastic. So now I need to come back and visit.
Yes, we do. And buy more tea.
Buy more tea. Mm-hmm. I wish I had fly to Japan first class. That's where I bought my tea. Like that kind of money.
Right.
But and, if I was wealthy, I wouldn't care about fancy clothes or cars or a mansion.
Well, you could get it chipped. I gotta pick it up.
I need, and then I need my... Sanai's my tea sommelier to take me to these special stores.
What'd be even great is if you just bought the tea at the airport and then went turned around.
What an asshole. Then someone should murder me on their camping trip if I did that. I'm a goddamn asshole.
Well, it's just as good as what's in Tokyo.
Yeah, what's the point? It's the airport.
I already got here.
What else is there to see in Japan? I'm going to get crazy rich, fly there to buy my tea, and spend a couple weeks there while my katana's being made for me, and then kill myself at the airport.
Before or after buying tea?
After. I will do a Japanese tea ceremony, and then seppuku.
Yeah. Well,
it was a dark left turn, Aaron.
I would recommend before you did that to try to find a shogun with a lot of money.
Okay.
And try to do the suicide grift where you pretend you're going to kill yourself, and then he gives you money to go away.
I'm doing a Tokyo suicide tea grift.
The Lords. We just saw a movie about that. It was a year or two ago where the, I can't remember what the name of it was.
Something where they went to the forest, right? Was it that one?
It was, No, it was the one where it was, that was like the thing, like all these samurai had fallen on hard times and they couldn't make any money.
Yeah.
So they would go to the lords and say, look, I need to come in here and kill myself. I'm like, I don't want you killing yourself here. Why don't, here's some money, just go away. And then one guy called him on his bluff, the one samurai, and said, well, okay, all right, we'll set it up for tomorrow. That, you can kill yourself tomorrow.
That was a remake of a 60s samurai movie. I forget the name of it, but yes, I remember because I saw both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the 60s remake at the Arrow Theater on a double bill with Yojimbo, and then the remake that came out a couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. With, I forget who's in it. Is Ken Watanabe in it? I'm not sure. Anyway.
Yeah. It's a blur.
It's good.
So anyway, Alice Frazier.
Frazier!
Brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. You know, the people that just fast-forwarded through all of these Patreon just missed a really cool topic about suicide grifts and samurai.
and high-end tea shopping. Yes.
The shows were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival in April 2018 with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Go to alicefrazier.com. And Rebecca Evans, The Art Podcast. When we move past hesitation, we're true to ourselves, find our own art in life. You want to hear some fun stories, get inspired, check out The Art, facebook.com/theartpodcasts with an S. And La Calavera by Alan Ross. Story of a pirate radio operator decides to go into the pirate cable TV business. Darren Loney, together with a group of misfits and the questionable guidance of a spiritual advisor in the form of Richard Nixon, gear up to take on the world's largest media conglomerate and its egomaniacal celebrity CEO. It's on Amazon in ebook and hard copy.
Forgot to say Art Podcast. We've both been on it.
Yes.
Cool podcast.
Really fun. And David Hynek, a composer of contemporary classical music that people actually like. Go to davidhynek.com, H-E-I-N-I-C-K. All right, boom.
The movie was Harakiri, Death of a Samurai.
Harakiri.
Yes. Remake of Harakiri.
Yep.
Ah, thank
and
you.
It came out 2016?
2011.
2011. Oh, right. And the original came out?
62.
And the director was?
Of the original?
Yes.
I don't think we got it as a country until
Masaki
like
Kobayashi?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Masaki Kobayashi was like, everybody knows Kurosawa,
right?
But he's another very well-known guy that just wasn't as, you know, he's like whatever the Howard Hawks to the John Ford or whatever analogy you want to make.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was released in Japan in 2011.
He's
but
the McG to the David Fincher.
Wow, you've insulted his entire family, Chris. Equating it with Mick G. Wow. No, he's a very good filmmaker that just doesn't get the acclaim. He doesn't have the great body of work. Mm-hmm. Mick G shouldn't be compared to anybody.
No, it's true.
Other than a toaster.
Yeah. Or David Fincher.
Or David Fincher. but yeah, it was made in 2011, but I think we didn't get it here till like...
No, a couple years later.
Yeah. 13 or 14, maybe?
I do not have that information.
Yeah, because I remember... Hasn't been that long since we've seen it. Okay, so trailers. Let's talk about John Wick Chapter 3. You know, as long as these keep making money, guess what? They're going to keep making them.
Well, I think it's more about as long as John Wick is
alive,
is taking care of business. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Adding Halle Berry to the mix on this one.
How Halle Berry became a dog trailer. Let's see, John Wick 3 trailer. Screen, ladies and gentlemen. Somebody is fed up.
It's got a great tagline, Parabellum.
Of course.
Okay, so John Wick 3.
Jonathan, what have you done?
Picking up right after the events of John Wick 2.
The impossible dream.
There is no escape for you. The high table wants your life.
What I love, too, is he never wears body armor. Like, it's just his tie and his shirt and his coat.
Tell me what you want.
Oh.
Passage.
I can't help you.
Angela.
To reach the unreachable star.
Do you expect him to make it out? A $14 million bounty on his head.
It's a good time to release it because there's so many superhero movies coming out in the summer now. It's like, yeah, just give us an old school action movie, too.
Can we say John Wick?
Dog, 5 seconds.
John Wick, excommunicado.
You can't really say, well, this is a movie for adults.
Two.
One.
Wow. away we go.
Samurai motorcycle assassins. He's Morpheus.
Oh, yes. He comes back.
Yeah. He gives him pills.
Riding a horse.
Then he shoots a guy in the head with a horse. Oh, now he's on a sand. Oh, yeah. Great.
Sophia, we're not going in the Aquaman set. Old days. Just a conversation.
Nothing's ever just a conversation with you, John.
Well, that is true. Yeah, he's got you there.
It's true. Let the dogs out.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Well, finally the dogs get to fight in this one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't want them just talking.
Mm-hmm. And the next one is Miss Bala.
Miss Bala.
Yeah.
Trailer, ladies and gentlemen. Miss Bala official trailer.
I'm not giving up on my family.
Mackie.
We're gonna have corrupt officials.
I'm so happy that you're here.
Well, if you hear the word happy in the first line of the movie, you know things are gonna go south in 30 seconds.
I was gonna be able to come back.
Especially if people are dancing in a club.
You always made me feel like family. You are my family.
Family. So family's important. We're happy. Oops.
Oh, now it's
boy, if you take away family from someone who really values it.
Yeah, then they're in trouble.
I bet you they're gonna be mad.
They might want a little thing called revenge.
What?
Yeah, Merrick. From Los Angeles.
I just want to find my friend. Oh.
I need you to do a favor for me first.
Snarled.
You mess around and I'll kill you both.
Park the car real close to the curb.
Let's go.
Is this you?
You have to believe me. They made me do it.
The building that you blew up is a DEA safe house. You know how long you'll go away for? Unless you help us get Lino Esparza.
Please.
Possibly some corrupt. See it in your eyes. Drug dealers. See it in your face. Cartel action.
Forget your friends. No one's coming to save you.
Whether or not you survive, it's entirely up to you.
The guns with scopes on them.
You're gonna be my queen.
You gotta learn how to use
one of these.
A bala. A bullet. A bala said it was everything. Hit me like a
ever since you showed up, the police been one step ahead. Hit me
like you better do what you need to do.
That must be the lieutenant that the drug dealer doesn't listen to.
I have a plan. I'm gonna come back for you.
There's always your lieutenant's like, I don't trust you.
Yeah, only she here, then the police know exactly what we're doing.
Shut up, Ramon. Yeah.
We're in love. You don't know what you're talking about.
In the end, the bullet settles everything.
Yeah. Oh, like your drug dealer husband said. So... All right, not quite a Taken movie, but in the same realm.
Well, I tell you, if you're going to just do an action-y, shoot 'em up, I like it's not just a, you killed my sister, I'm coming for you, but like, I love it when somebody is, and she got jammed up through no fault of her own.
Right, now she's in too deep.
She is in too deep. What does she do? Mm-hmm. She's framed. They took her family. The DEA is running a game.
Yeah.
How do I get out of this jam? Yeah.
Maybe you side with the drug dealer.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you play both sides against the middle.
You do. Yeah, you're a triple agent.
Maybe you don't know what's going on. Maybe black is white and white is black, Chris. Maybe up is down.
Yeah. Maybe rain is sun.
From the director of Twilight.
Oh.
Wow. Boy, did Aaron just ruin the party. Yeah.
Sorry to poop in your cereal. We were so excited.
You know, it's weird. I didn't see that tagline on the trailer. Yeah, from the director of Twilight.
From the director of Twilight. Man, do I not want to see this movie now. I was all excited. Gina Rodriguez taking care of business. Corrupt DEAs.
All right.
You never know.
Well, we'll see. Maybe you just needed to get Twilight out of a system. Maybe. Oh, no, we did all four movies. What? No.
No, just the first one, as far as I can tell.
All right, just the first one.
All right.
So you just took the money.
Yeah.
Went on a Twilight run.
She? Catherine Hardwick.
Catherine Hardwick.
Oh, Catherine Hardwick. That's right. She's actually, she's got a fairly impressive resume.
All right, so we can't hold Twilight
against her. Can't. Mm-mm. She tried to do something different with Twilight. Didn't work.
Yeah. That's a, I mean...
But again, not her fault.
Yeah, I can't blame her for that.
That's a giant franchise with 1,000 eyes and notes looking at you. So there's how much could
she
have done?
It's like James Bond.
Yeah.
Or something like that, where they're just like, no, I want to do this. No, you don't. You're going to do this. Yeah, this is what's going to happen.
This is the equivalent of a paint by number.
It's like doing a corporate gig.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're like... I got these edgy stuff in my act. That's great. Don't say it tonight.
Right.
Save it. And be funny right after they drop the dessert.
Right. And here's a bunch of employees' names and affectations. Make fun of them for 40 minutes.
Yep. Make fun of them. There's the boss and the competitor's name is this.
Yeah.
And make fun of them.
And we need to be out in 45 minutes.
And we need to be done. And here's 10 times what you would normally make.
Right, exactly. okay, so we have on DVD Blu-ray, First Man. This movie I just didn't like. I really felt like it fell flat. It was definitely kind of like an overrated. Ryan Gosling he was emotionally detached, but through the entire film, which is interesting at first, but... After 2 hours, you're like, well, my God, do something. Like, it's one of those things where it just didn't come together.
Yeah, I mean,
had a lot of flaws.
Yeah, it got some production design, I think, nomination, but that was about it.
Yeah, and honestly, it doesn't even deserve that.
Yeah, and I got sound editing, sound mixing. Which, good luck beating Roma.
Yeah,
Yeah. But
and The Hate U Give... And that you saw that.
I did see that. I really liked this movie. It had a really solid message.
It's just weird, like release windows too. Like that was just in the theaters a couple months ago.
Yeah. But I don't know. I get it in the sense that like we're in this weird time where you either got to see John Wick or something or Glass or Oscar nominees being re-released.
Right.
So, and the weather's bad. In most parts of the country, so this on VOD or something.
I'm actually for the shorter release windows. I mean, I think some movies take way too long to come out on VOD and DVD. And for whatever arbitrary reason, the studios do that with specific films. It's just not the way the market is anymore. You know, people want to see the movie. They want to see it now. They're still going to pay for it. Make it available. Mm-hmm. Let people see it. Johnny English Strikes Back. I don't even know how many movies have been in this franchise. I'm a fan of Rowan Atkinson. You probably couldn't pay me to see this movie. you know, there's a lot of you younger listeners are like, wow, what has he done that's so great? And like, well, you have to go back to Blackadder and, you know, some of his earlier work. Even like some of the earlier Mr. Bean stuff is actually kind of good slapsticky, old school stuff, British humor. But
I've always hated him.
Out of all the stuff he's done, and he shows up in a ton of movies here and there, like his cameos and other things, everything from kids' movies to adult movies. And then, but then he makes these weird, like Johnny English Strikes Again. I guess they're kids' movies. I don't even know because they don't really do well here and they don't really fit. So I'm not sure why even bother. Just, you know, with a theatrical release for these.
I'd say Hate U Gives us a good movie. And then I would go out and try to see, you know, Beautiful Boy or something like that before you run out to see Johnny English Goes to College or whatever this is.
So, and the site spotlight and the fan feedback, you know, the message boards are getting a little more active. If you want to check out and join the conversation, please do. We're slowly building them back up. A couple of you are coming back, and we'd like to keep that up. And, you know, Charlene's doing a great job with the moderating. Thank you so much, Charlene. And Dana Gould merch is still on sale, 20% off. Use the coupon code Dana, and that will be until the end of March. And we are not resupplying anything, so anything that is there, you need to get now, because not only are we not resupplying it, but they're not reprinting anything. Like the a lot of the physical merchandise and even the shirts. I think Dana's doing the Bevel Aquas as a reprint, and that's it. And all the other designs, like the logo and the Opera Man ones, we're the last place you're going to get them. So if you're a Dana Gould fan, check them out and make sure you do it very soon.
Limited merch, guys. It's you know, when you do that, we're clearing out the store. We're paring stuff down because we're going to be going into more production this year.
Yes.
And also, you know, when you do that, you're supporting our site. You're supporting independent artists and comedians.
And the other thing, too, is it's merchandise we've already paid for. Mm-hmm. So it actually helps us a lot to liquidate this inventory. It's like not only getting a profit, but we get the money back that we spent.
Yeah.
So it's really helpful to us if you grab stuff in the store. Also, the Allison Rosen merch, we are also liquidating. That's 20% off. Use the code SNUGGLE. Mm. So check that out as well. All right. And premiering this week.
This is such an odd time of the year.
It really is. And, you know, what's weird is, like, the Kid Who Would Be King, I would almost put in the same category as Johnny English Strikes Again. It's another, like, weird UK import of a live-action kids movie. And but what I was thinking about it, my kids are not excited to see this. They don't care. And I don't know what it's like in the other countries, but this type of filmmaking is becoming a bit obsolete. And the reason I say that is because the kids' programming now is a lot different than it used to be many years ago. Like, Disney used to churn out movies like this all the time. You've got, you know, a Spaceman in King Arthur's Court. Right. You've got, you know, the Herbie movies, you know, the Apple Dumpling Gang, all of these kinds of movies that were live-action kids' movies. They were coming out all the time. But because of places like Netflix and cable and Amazon, the amount of kids' programming has proliferated and increased. So the kids that want to go see the movies, it has to be like a big event movie. It's a big animated movie. It's a superhero movie. Mm-hmm. It's based on a license that, you know, maybe like a SpongeBob that they've seen all the time that go up. But like a live action movie like this that's solely at kids, no adult's going to see this without kids. It's really kind of a dying breed. And the reason is because there's so many other choices for kids now, it's like almost not necessary. So, So I think what, you know, these types of movies, they're even better served of like, well, maybe, you know, as streaming or whatever, because that's still where they're like, theatrical releases make no sense because they're so expensive and you're going to get so few people in the theater to see these. I'm not saying don't make them. I'm saying change the way they're released.
Yeah, it seems hard to, like,
you know, as a family, we're all going to go see Mary Poppins.
Right.
You know, we're not going to go see a weird British movie about a kid who's going to be King Arthur. So, as a family now, and as kids, they're going to want to see the superhero movies, How to Train Your Dragon. All those are the ones they're going to ask to go see, like something like this. I'm like, it doesn't really excite them. The other movie is Serenity. It's the trailer we watched a week or two ago, and it's the one that we watched multiple times because it seems to be like every time we see this trailer, the movie gets pushed back, the release date, like another 6 to 8 months. But it's finally being released.
I swear I saw this trailer before Infinity War.
Yeah.
This trailer, they've been running this trailer for a year.
Right.
Like, it's got a $25 million budget, and if it didn't have Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway in it, it would have been buried a long time ago.
Yeah, it probably would never get released.
They keep hoping it's going to somehow...
We're going to get some money back on it.
Something, and it just looks like it makes no sense.
Maybe they're taking my advice and making this a backdoor Jaws remake.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
That would be the greatest movie con ever. Like, you know, and that never even mentioned it. Just the four people that are going to go see this movie are like, there was a giant shark in this movie. Whoa, I wasn't expecting that.
So a year of trailers is that's the longest MacGuffin you could ever implement. Okay.
Well, that is our show, Graham.
That is our show. Episode 451, Chris. Mm-hmm. It's halfway to 902.
Yeah, we're really getting there.
We're excited. 902 is going to be big. I've been planning.
If there's still a planet, I think 902 is going to be a great episode.
Right. It might be more of a post-apocalyptic get-together. Mm-hmm. More of a like, hey, bring water and canned food.
Yeah, and we'll talk about classic movies when they used to show them.
Yeah, and make sure everybody has their own crossbow so the hordes don't invade, but it'll be fun. Yeah,
and bring your own bandages.
Yeah, bring your own. If anyone's an EMT, you're right. More than you get in free. Yeah. So yeah, 902. It's going to be great.
Yes.
We're going to celebrate episode 500 this year.
We are, from a shelter.
Do you think it's going to go down this quick? You think it's going to end before the end of the year?
I think that's the beginning of the end. Yeah. Okay. I think we're going to still live in shelters for another 5 to 10 years before things really go south.
All right. But we should have an episode 500 something.
We should, for definitely.
Maybe someone should fly us to Australia.
That's not a bad idea. Or maybe back to Japan.
Or maybe we go to Japan so I can get some tea.
I think that's a great idea.
And the end of the 500 episode 500 is me killing myself at the airport.
Via Skype.
I'll make it a Patreon tier. Mm-hmm. Seppuku tier.
Yeah, that's...
Skypuku.
Huh?
Skypuku.
Aaron Brungardt, ladies and gentlemen.
Somebody can be your virtual second.
Oh. Yeah, who wants to be my virtual Kaishaku? Skypuku. Oh, God, I love a good marketing slogan.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We're going to be doing a little, a bonus episode with the Oscar nominations. And, of course, I'm working on getting Doug Benson in here to do our annual should win.
Exactly. That's what it'll be.
We've only been doing that episode for 8 years. I don't know why it's hard for me to remember. Thank you to our guest, Nobody.
Yes.
And
well done.
Thank you for all the comedians that either don't respond or cancel at the last minute.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
2 weeks in the row of that.
Yeah.
Well done, everybody.
Way to go, suckwads. You suckholes. My name's Graham Elwood.
I did want to mention this.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's more stuff.
Yeah, there's an announcement. I've been talking about Long Ago and Far Away. I have a publishing announcement to make. Yes. Starburns Industries, Dan Harmon's company, will be publishing it and breaking it up into digital comics, 8 digital comics, and then releasing the entire thing digitally after that.
Awesome.
So very excited to be working with Dan Harmon's company on this. And I will let you guys know when it is up on Comixology. But in the meantime, if you can't wait, buy the hard copy at the Comedy Film Nerd store, and I will sign it for you.
It's a fun read, man. Mm-hmm. It's really cool, and it was another thing
way to support
the show, and it's awesome. And I'm doing Political Vigilante live in Hollywood January 30th. My special guest is Jimmy Dore. Headlining All the Zanies, The End of Chicago, and then Progressive Comedy Tour is coming in March to Lafayette, Louisiana, Oxford, Mississippi, New Orleans, and Pensacola. So all those tour dates are at Graham Elwood.
When's the Zanies tour? You said you're...
February 21st through March 2nd. I'm doing 3 nights in St. Charles, 3 nights in downtown Chicago.
So you're doing the Zanies, The End of Chicago, you said. So we'll see.
Well, Chicago is going to be done by the end of February. Chicago is going to be off the map. So,
we just need to know when that is.
Yeah, it's just a plan. Plan accordingly, guys. There will be no more City of Chicago come March. So come see me headline
Skype Cago.
Skype Cago, guys. One of the Pacific Rim monsters is going
to
kaijus is going to come out of Lake Michigan and devour. So definitely want to see me tell jokes at the Zanies, The End of Chicago. Go to grahamelwood.com for Skype Cago.
Well, that is our show, ladies and gentlemen. So we will be back next week. Actually, stay tuned. We'll be having the reactions to the Academy Award nominations that will be released very shortly. So my name is Chris Mancini.
I'm Graham Elwood.
And remember,
Han shot first. We did that in the other order. It screwed me up.
It just threw me off.
I didn't know what was going on.